What's it all for?
Various artists.
Lucy Male is a Tamaki-based artist whose practice primarily explores our relationship with animals, examining and questioning the limits of human conjectures about them as a relational investigation rather than a scientific inquiry. Predominantly working in sculpture and publication, Male embraces the absurd, gathering and assembling archive found objects, drawing and casting into material relation. In her current solo exhibition in the changing room at Gus Fisher Gallery, Phone Tree, Male has turned her interests in human and animal relationships to moths, reframing moth traps as holders of moth narratives, as inadvertent collectors capturing moth memory, drama, and dreams. In Phone Tree, Male presents five moth situations, each embodying a different kind of moth and reimagining its trap into a new form, reflecting its potential experience, memory, or navigation of the world as a moth, an act of anthropocentric guesswork of their interiority. Enveloping these situations are large-scale drawings on the walls, made of this moth-eaten-looking tissue paper, layered, collaged, and hole-punched, creating this playful exploration of scale within the space. Imagining the interior lives of moths in such detail, Male has turned these moth traps as devices of surveillance and control into portals of reconsideration of our relationships with them, reorienting our pre-existing ideas of the lives and world of moths. I had a kōrero with Lucy Male about Phone Tree and her overall practice.
I'm Lucy Male and I work in sculpture, but for me that encompasses a lot of different things. So it can be objects or it can be video, drawings, publication especially, and images. And really the concern of my practice is humans' relationship with animals and how that has changed across history. So I often look for something strange or interesting or funny in history and then think about what might be the kind of contemporary parallel to that in our environment. And I'm especially interested in animals that are in our everyday. So not like the distant animal, but the close by animal, because I feel like that is where a lot of our assumptions are kind of under-recognised.
Through drawing, sculpture and intricate lace work, your current exhibition at Gus Fisher Gallery, Phone Tree, sees you reframing moth traps as objects of surveillance and control, instead as holders of moth narratives, as inadvertent collectors of moth memory, drama and dreaming. I wanted to start this conversation around Phone Tree by speaking to its beginnings. Where did this body of work kind of gain its initial momentum? Was there a specific idea or experience that really kickstarted your approach to this project?
Yeah, it came maybe like a few years ago, and I was in the UK and I was like doing the rounds of all the big institutional galleries and museums and things like that. And I became obsessed with like finding and seeing the moth traps that all galleries and museums have somewhere because they're trying to kind of take care of their collection. But I started to kind of notice how they were trying to hide them or make them pretty, or allow them to blend in and kind of like down in low places or up on top of shelves or vitrines and things like that. So I was like obsessed with fossicking those things out, and I started to take photos of all these examples of moth traps in these places. Mm. This kind of relates to my own personal experience of being like obsessed with the moths in my own house and like being worried whenever I see a moth like come out of the pantry or like come out of my wardrobe, and like then immediately zoning in on where did that moth come from and how many of them are there and have I got a moth problem. So I could see like the parallels between the institutional spaces and also like my own experience of moths. And seeing these traps then led me to kind of start my own research about where do they buy these moth traps from. So the galleries will buy their moth traps from specific places that are to do with like preservation. And then that allowed me to find a whole bunch of other styles or forms of moth traps that are directed at different types of moths. So like moths that are agricultural pests as opposed to clothing moths, for example. So yeah, that was the start of the obsession, was observing something and then that becoming a starting point for further research and interest and kind of unfolding the form of the moth trap.
That's so interesting. I didn't realise that kind of starting point started in a gallery itself. Like, when you think of moths, you think of it as being in more of a domestic space, as you said, which was also, I guess, a bit of a starting point. But it's really cool how you've taken something from the gallery that's been so hidden and then made it the whole space in a gallery.
Yeah. What is really interesting as well is, like, in previous exhibitions I've done, there have been, like, these moth things kind of come up. Like, often galleries will ask you, are you bringing anything natural into the museum? And if so, then you have to get it, like, sequestered for 24 hours to make sure you're not bringing in more bugs into the environment. And also, one exhibition I was in, somebody, like, they emailed me prior to coming down to install the show, and they were like, look, we have a moth problem. Just wanted to tell you that we have a moth problem. Are you bringing down anything that could be eaten by the moths? And so, like, it really just starts to build up. Like, the passion of interest starts to build up over time. And I think that's what then made me look and, like, notice the moth traps in the galleries. You know, so, like, these kind of intrusions into my everyday or how I expect things to work, right? How that galleries are these kind of sealed places, when in actual fact they're not. And they're always waging some kind of war against time, moisture, bugs, dust, all those types of things. It's really fascinating to me. So, yeah, kind of bringing the moth into the front of the picture, I suppose, in this exhibition is quite an interesting layer.
Yeah, I'm also interested in this choice of title for the show, Phone Tree. Would you like to speak a little as to how this title came to you and its relationship between the conceptual underpinnings of the show?
So when I was a kid, I was in a soccer team, and this was prior to, like, WhatsApp groups or Facebook or things like that. And the way that we would find out whether the game was on or not on was, like, somebody would call someone, and then that person had a duty to call a group of other people, and so on and so forth. So this idea of, like, the phone tree, I remember that being on the fridge and asking my mum and being like, what is a phone tree? And her trying to explain it to me. Oh, this is just how, like, we pass information down, and it's easier that way rather than one person calling 20 parents, you only having to call one or two. And this really kind of, like, it's funny, titles, I think, for me, they arrive as opposed to me trying to find a title. It's like, once the work is underway, there's titles that sort of, like, bubble up from other places. And Phone Tree was one of those titles. And to me, because I was thinking a lot about the moth life cycle, and not only obviously do they have this kind of metamorphosis that occurs, right? So, like, the egg into the larvae into the moth proper. They also undergo a lot of, like, shedding stages called instars when they're in the larval stage. And I was thinking about, like, how do moths transfer information in between these stages? Like, what must it be like to undergo a series of, like, very stark changes across your life, and then generationally as well, how do they pass information along, or how do they pass stories along, or memories, or gossip? And so that just got me thinking, right, about, like, the phone tree and the human, like, versions of passing down information.
You can just imagine moths gossiping now. That's all I can think about. You spoke a little bit at the beginning. I guess your practice, like, sits in this exploration of animals, considering our relationship to them as humans. And I think with animals, particularly, like, moths or other animals we consider as pests, we make these conjectures or assumptions about them. What I guess is quite clear with this show is that it's not meant to be kind of trying to achieve any scientific accuracy within the works, but rather as a relational exploration of these animals' interiority. What kind of interests you generally in exploring this animal and human relationship?
Something that got me, well, not got me started, but, like, was relevant for this show. I've been making work about animals maybe for, like, 7 or 8 years now, like, specifically about animals and the human relationship with animals. But for this show, I'd read a book by David Pena Guzman called When Animals Dream. And it starts off, he kind of, like, really, like, it's a great book. He really clearly unfolds, like, how scientists have done these experiments, right? Where they're trying to observe, first of all, whether animals dream and what animals dream about. And then he extends this idea of the dream as being evidence of animal imagination, right? And so that is evidence of animal consciousness, sentience, and then what that means in terms of an ethics of human-animal relationship. So he talks about how do we assign animals moral value, so seeing them as equal to humans, or at the very least exceeding how we maybe currently think about animals.
Mm.
So he kind of like does this really beautiful job, right, of like tying together what seems like the simplest question, like what do animals dream about, with, I think, really interesting, pertinent and poignant concerns about how do we value animals in our day-to-day and what impact does that have on how we think about other human beings as well and how we think about the world more generally.
Mm.
So it's not just that the concern is animals and that we should be devoting all our attention to animals, but that once we start to think about that idea, animals have a moral value, then you start to think about other kind of unfoldings from that.
Mm, totally, because I think we as humans have this idea of superiority over other animals. So there's so many, and then there's so many complexities with that, you know, the way that we use animals, the way that we eat animals, the way that animals interact with our lives without us even really realizing it. Like, there's so many places you can take that idea.
Mm.
I want to get into speaking a little about the works in the show more specifically. Each sculptural work in the space kind of examines a different kind of moth and associated moth trap: the pantry moth, guava moth, the spongy moth, clothes moth, and a corn earworm moth. I guess to speak a little to these works, I wanted to speak a little to their material language firstly. How did you kind of approach gathering material and making these individual elements in relation to the different moths each sculpture embodies? Can you speak to me a little bit about the process of selection for sourcing and making these objects?
Yeah, so for me, I was really keen to start with the traps themselves. So like what is in the exhibition is these kind of like five, call them like situations, I suppose, five different sculptures that, as you mentioned, like they reference a specific type of moth, but also that specific moth's trap. And so it started with me buying a whole bunch of these moth traps. Some of the traps we don't have in New Zealand, so I had to get them from overseas. But all of the moths are, like, we do have in New Zealand or have been invasive species in New Zealand. And that was quite important to me to kind of make that distinction between, again, that the close animal as opposed to the far animal, so the one that we could conceivably come in contact with. So it started with the traps themselves, and I felt a little bit stuck until I had received the traps. I did a lot of thinking about this idea of transfer of information and what that meant, like, in a conceptual material sense. So how does the idea of the information transfer make itself felt as a material or an approach to materials? And for me, that then came into thinking about, like, that no sculpture could be made in a separate piece, which is something I've done before, like the idea of like the simplest possible sculpture I could make. In this instance, I was like, okay, what is the, like, the most aggregate sculpture I could make? So the sculpture that's made of the most separate parts that I hadn't managed to conceive of in its totality prior to making it. And that was really the way that I went about then, kind of, once I had the traps, I sat with the traps and, like, thought about them for a couple of weeks and, like, looking at them and disassembling them and kind of considering their strange construction, because these moth traps are mainly made out of, like, cardboard or plastic or core flute, and they're supposed to be really simple to kind of pop up and make. So they're basically like nets of boxes that then you kind of like construct yourself. So they're intended to be simple, but there's these little interesting kind of twists. So like hole punch pieces or like slots or these folded bits or these traps that look like milk cartons wearing hats. So they're all kind of specific in their own way, and they're all dimensioned really specifically as well. So it was really like a process of getting to know these objects that I'd only seen on the screen. And then that started to kind of get me thinking about other materials in my studio that I've had just sort of sitting there, so I've collected over time, or other kind of approaches like collage. So there's a lot of paper collage in the show. The walls are covered in these very large scale hole punch, I call them, drawings that sit behind the sculptures. So it was like a process of kind of thinking about these individual traps and then breaking them apart and then trying to kind of put them back together, but in a way that they didn't really resemble the original objects anymore. They resembled something else. And then I sort of realized, oh, this thing looks like a something. So this trap looks like a doormat, or this trap looks like a lantern.
Mm.
And I started to kind of make these associations between the strange trap object, which came into my studio, and then a familiar object that could some way act as like an anchor to the sculpture itself, to bring it back down to reality once I had kind of blown it apart and then put it back together again. But in terms of materials, like, I'm very wide-ranging, I suppose. I like to go out to op shops and, like, purchase secondhand stuff. So a lot of the material that you might see in the show is from op shops, is all from Trade Me, or is things that I've used prior and I've reconfigured them. And then I like to cast things. So there's a lot of the cast objects are plaster or pewter. So I like to kind of work in those two materials as well.
Yeah, I kind of thought that with the kind of material gathering that there was maybe like a little bit of a magpie attitude to finding things.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Often I will like go to an op shop and I just get taken by a specific thing.
Mm.
Like one set of materials that's in the show is a lot of secondhand envelopes, and that is because I'd gone to an op shop and I'd open this plastic drawer, you know, you just like get to have a fossick around in those places, and all of these beautiful, slightly like weathered coloured envelopes were there, like all different sizes. It was almost like somebody had a card shop and that this was old stock, but they were all different types, and I just was struck by the beauty of the object, right? And then I bought a whole bunch of them and I took them home. And then they sat in the studio alongside some of the other objects that I'd already collected and alongside the traps. And it's that sort of meeting point for me that's really, really important. And then I'm lucky enough to have had the time to kind of sit in the studio with them, is the meeting point between two or three or four objects is like where the work really happens.
I guess to kind of add to that, you spoke a little bit to it there with the kind of deconstruction and then reconstructing the moth traps into something recognizable but still obscure. I'd love to know a little bit more about how you kind of took those into their final form. Can you walk me through, I guess, a little more specifically to the works, how you went from compiling and forming the individual elements of the sculptures to forming a cohesive sculpture?
Yeah, I think it varies depending on like the different sculptures. So some of them feel like, once I get a couple of objects, for example, there's a work in the show which is like a drawer that's made out of cast crackers. Once I had the crackers in my studio as a snack, like, so like salada crackers, like that kind of very identifiable to me, at least. I don't know whether it is to anyone else, but like the kind of like four crackers that are joined together and then you snap them into quarters. I had those in studio as a snack, and I had the pantry moth trap as well.
Mm.
And I sort of like did this thing where I was like looking from one object to the other, right? The cracker, the trap, the cracker, the trap. And they're like the same scale. So like the square of the trap is the same scale as a salada.
Mm.
And I just was like, okay, that's it, right? Sometimes it can be just the simplest, like, kind of dumbest idea, which for me is, like, the sweet spot, is, like, the simple idea that unfolds from there. And then I was like, okay, well, if I were to think about this trap in terms of, like, the cracker and its relationship and scale to each other, then, like, what happens next? And I was like, okay, to me it seemed obvious that then I would try to make something out of the crackers, but they're obviously very flimsy. And so then I decided to cast these crackers. And I just was thinking as well, like, okay, so obviously in the pantry there's the drawers, and like moths can be basically anywhere in your pantry, right? So I was thinking about this, the scale of like when you open up a drawer and you're like, oh my gosh, like what has happened to my spices or like seeds or whatever it is that you've got that the moths have eaten.
Mm.
Like that moment of discovery, right?
Mm.
And so for me, then I was like, it just seemed obvious. So some of them seem really obvious as like a silly idea taken to its like furthest point, and that inside this cracker drawer, the moths have other types of food. So there's rice crackers and pumpkin seeds and almonds, and they're all signed by moths. So they all have moth names on them, what I'm calling moth names.
Yeah, I saw Kathy.
Yeah, so like I asked friends, like, if you were to name a moth, like, what would you name a moth? And that was
Kathy.
Someone's suggestion, which I thought was brilliant. Yeah, so that one seemed simple. That was kind of almost the first one that really came together, not just as an idea, but as a physical form.
Mm.
And then some of the other ones took longer. I don't know why they take longer. I just think it's just what happens in that instance. So the corn earworm, that was like the last one that really, I struggled with that one because I'd made these, or I'd got these kind of pieces of leather laser cut, and that was simply because I looked at the particular trap and it looked like a handbag. Like it looked like a 1920s like single strap kind of like handbag, like very like dainty in particular.
So chic,
you know, but sticky and awful. And then thinking about this trap as a handbag, that was the initial idea that got me started. But I struggled with the form of what that would be like. And it took me quite a while before realizing that it was maybe not so much a handbag as like a basket or like a bassinet.
Mm.
And it's in the show, it's turned into this bassinet for a corn with a baby corn inside. And there's popcorn underneath. And there's corn recipes on the side with the kind of idea that it's this, the corn earworm moth is training future corn to be delicious corn. Mm-hmm. So it can eat this corn. So yeah, all of the sculptures have their own like logic, I suppose. Like the thing that I'm thinking about in terms of the moth or what it's attempting to do, which really I drew a lot from like Gary Larson's Far Side cartoon. Just kind of the punchline or the silly joke taken really far in service of something else, right? In service of creating that kind of absurd rupture in thinking, which I think we need in terms of animals.
Yeah, I wanted to come back as well. You spoke a little bit to it before, but I want to speak to the walls of the gallery. You've covered them in this almost moth-eaten looking tissue paper, layered collage and hole punch to turn the imagined traces of feeding larvae into large-scale drawings and wrapping the moth situations in the space. Would you like to speak a little to this element of the show and how you see it engaging with the rest of the works in space?
What I wanted to do with the walls was this like extreme difference in scale. The logic was for me, everything on the traps or to do with the sculptures is one-to-one. So it's cast objects or it's been made at the exact scale of the object that I'm trying to reference or the trap that I'm trying to reference. And then everything off the sculptures is at a largely like blown up scale.
Mm.
So on one of the walls, there's a really huge image, which is a detail of a photograph. And the other walls are these almost like if you zoomed in on a piece of paper, these kind of collage tissue paper panels. And then I have hole punched into these kind of pieces of paper, sort of abstract linear drawings that to me reference parts of the traps themselves.
Mm.
So thinking about like what might the moth see if it just sort of glanced at the side of the trap, like a single line of the trap. So yeah, I was really trying to think about what is the scale difference, right, between the human and the moth and the human experience and the moth experience, and what would require us in an exhibition space or an installation to zoom in and out between those two extremes.
Mm.
So coming in and kind of being hit by the scale of the paper on the walls, and then having to go quite close to some of the objects in order to understand what it is they are and to see the kind of combinations of materials and how the lace work is attached or how the pigment is kind of caught on something or the sawdust is on the side of these sculptures. So yeah, thinking about the extreme scale differences was really important to me. And so the drawings became an essential part of that.
And I think there's like certainly an element of, I guess, playfulness and almost absurdity in the works in the show. Imagining the experiences, memories or feelings of moths is not something that people may have really considered before or thought that much about. Can you tell me a little bit more about this, I guess, gravitation towards the absurd and exploring these ideas?
I think that in my own work, it's the thing that comes the easiest, is like having a bit of fun or trying to be a bit silly. I do think that in artwork, it's a under-recognized element, I think, of lots of people's work.
Mm.
And it is, humor is like one of the most difficult things to talk about as an element of artwork, I think, because the second that you want to talk about it is the second that it's not funny anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and so then you've lost, it's a very slippery thing. You've lost the very thing that you're trying to talk about. And it is kind of indescribable or ineffable in that way. And that is where I think that the absurdity has its power, is that for me, the joke never really resolves. Like, it's not really about a punchline It's not really about like a ta-da moment where like someone's supposed to laugh. Rather, it's about kind of inserting like a foot in the door and kind of going, well, isn't this weird? Mm. Isn't this strange? Don't you feel strange? Isn't this funny? Isn't this totally absurd, the way that we think about these things, or the way that, perhaps I should say, the way that I think about these things? Yeah, so for me, it is the thing that is completely essential to the work that I make and how I think about things. But it is also the most difficult thing to talk about, I think.
That was artist Lucy Mayle speaking to me about her current solo exhibition in the changing room at Gus Fisher Gallery, Phone Tree. Phone Tree is on now until the 22nd of August, so check it out.